we're ultimately all in the people business, and you are not great at attracting and making phenomenal hiring decisions, you're in trouble. Every time I get really, really laser focused, hiring people for integrity and attitude, everybody breathes a sigh of relief.
Welcome back to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman. I'm with Intellectual Strategies, a law firm that helps startups and scaling companies grow and take care of their legal needs. And I love talking with my clients. And so I thought, how do I get more of my client stories or stories like my clients? Because I can't share my clients' confidential stories. How do I get more CEOs sharing the stories that are kind of behind the scenes? So that's why we do this podcast, The Breakout CEO. And today I'm really glad to have Fletcher Wimbush with us to share some of his story about his company Discovered. Fletcher, hey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you. We're going to have to, at some point, get to some of this stuff if you got in the background on your screen. I suspect that's part of your platform, and we'll talk about some of that before we're done.
That was actually a turning point for me to you know, really lean into this. Yeah.
Awesome. We're gonna get into that. So we were talking before the show. You've been doing this or versions of this business for the last, you know, 13 plus years, helping companies hire the right people. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the goal.
I would say one of the things that the maybe the most recurring theme that I've seen over the last, we're probably on episode 80 by now, by the time this one publishes, over the last 80 episodes is, they're not all the same, but most every CEO who talks about the success in their business talks about the people, talks about building the team, sometimes, you know, making some team corrections and adding the right people or acquiring or, you know, transitioning. And so I've been not surprised, but I've been pleasantly, I guess, glad to hear how important people really are. What have you seen being in the people business? How would you characterize this for a lot of these companies who are really in the early stages of building, trying to get to the next level? What do you see with the people in those businesses?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, it's the absolute foundation of everything we do in any organization is none of us are in the business of whatever it is. We're not in the business of building homes. We're not in the business of doing marketing, creating leads, or providing legal services or whatever it is, right? I mean, we're ultimately all in the people business. And you know, I realized I started thinking about that when I was 16. I wrote my first papers around that topic. And that's a whole nother story about why I became interested in it, but mostly because I was found myself in leadership positions as a young person and, you know, really began thinking about this concept. So that's been my life's mission is, you know, focused on, you know, how do we get the right people in our organizations? When we do that, great things happen, right? We create results, we accomplish goals, we build amazing products, we deliver excellent service, you know, and then, but more importantly, we, you know, end up in an environment around people that we like being with and enjoy working with, and we're winning. When you win with the team, you generally like each other. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. So, I was just thinking about that this morning, actually. I was thinking, you know, in business, sometimes we're like, who can I go into business with? Who do I want to work with? Who would be fun to be with? And the thought came to me, it was maybe the first time I thought of it this way is who would be willing to risk it all with me? You know, everybody wants to win, but who would be willing to go into business and risk it all? And maybe that's because my personality is a little bit more risk tolerant. I'm like, who would risk it, you know, risk their interest a little bit with me? And I wonder what that would be like.
Well, that's a culture match thing, right? So your internal culture is like, hey, I want to go for the gold. I want to leave it all out on the field, right? You know, whatever. That mentality of like, I'm willing to put it all on the line, to risk it all, to accomplish my goal, right? And so, yeah, you're looking for somebody else who is also like-minded like that. Not everybody is willing to do that. Some people are like, I need a safety net.
Yeah.
Those people don't think that same way. And that doesn't mean they're not a good person. Doesn't mean they're not talented. They're just not a right fit for maybe Jeff's mission.
Right? Yeah, different roles even maybe. So that makes sense. I have to ask though, you say you started writing papers at 16. I don't hear that very often. I mean, a lot of 16-year-olds are writing papers, but they're writing, you know, papers about the books they read in their English class. What was prompting you to write leadership type papers at 16? Yeah.
Well, I mean, our school made us write a paper to graduate from high school, but you got, I think, I don't remember the parameters, but you have to pick like your topic, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my father was a executive coach, business coach.
Okay.
Subsequently, I've been evangelizing his ideas for the last 13 or 14 years, heavily influenced me as sort of a young man. I've actually got my daughter here bringing me some lemonade. So thank
you. Awesome. Enjoy.
I need that. She can hear me that I've been talking all day. My voice is scratchy. So no, you know, that I had that influence. And then I found myself naturally in leadership. I was captain of a football team. They elected me student body president. I pulled like a Trump in my high school. I like, you know, outdid all the kids that had been like in student body and like straight A students. I was not a good student. I was not a good.
You showed up and you're like, I think I'm going to do it.
Yeah. My slogan was, you know, Wimbush Australian for president, you know, after the old Foster's slogan. So,
okay.
You know, and they elected me and I went and I like, you know, platformed in all my classes and stood up in front of the whole student body and they elected me and I was on a change, you know, I'm going to fight the power here, you know, kind of a platform. Sure. I took it seriously. As much as that kind of, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to go do this crazy thing on a whim, you know, I really took it seriously and I began really thinking about these things. And so that's what inspired me to write the paper along those lines. I had an influencer, I had been in leadership roles and I had to write this paper to graduate.
Okay. So I don't feel so behind the curve then. This was high school, but it was a paper that maybe was above and beyond what normal high schoolers were thinking about at the moment. So your dad was an executive coach. That's got to be an interesting upbringing if he's sharing things with you, because he's getting, I mean, on this podcast, I'm talking with CEOs about their experiences and sometimes, you know, things go wrong and they talk about them, and other times things go right and they talk about how excited they are about that. Like, were you getting these types of tidbits and insights from your dad growing up? Did you hear these things as he experienced them and heard them from others?
We talked a lot of shop, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day. Right. And, but not just that too. I mean, you know, life lessons but my dad was a true coach. You know, he wasn't there telling me what to do, or this is what you should do, or how you should do it, or best practice. It was more of like, I got a problem, or here's an issue. And it's more of like, okay, what do you think you should do about it?
Okay. Yeah,
so he was really that kind of a guy, and did that really, really well. Now, he was really smart. He probably could have told me what to do, sure. in many cases, but he was also really smart, because I'm a high D. If you know, for all these disc people out there, like I'm not really going to listen to advice anyway. So he was really pretty clever that he would, you know, lead me to my solutions, right?
Yeah.
Now, if I was really off base, he'd probably tell me.
That's interesting.
Get your head out of the sand. Yeah. Don't.
Yeah. My dad was more the type of, and is not these days so much, but growing up, it was like, Jeff, the line is here. My line is here. You're not getting anywhere close to this line in the middle. So,
my parents tried that with me, but it didn't work very well.
Well, yeah, I will not divulge how successful it worked with me. Well, that's interesting. I mean, very interesting context. Do you think that helped lead you into the business that you're in? Just having those kind of ongoing conversations, the coaching, because when you're in the people business, and as you mentioned, every business is the people business. But when you're in the actual people business, helping people hire people and build teams, build culture, do you think that was influenced by some of the stuff that you talked about with your dad?
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind the scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I ultimately took over and became his chief evangelist, right? He passed away right when I took over after he passed away, we had been succession planning quite loosely. There wasn't any sense of urgency around it. I had a successful career and as running a commercial dish machine company, nothing glamorous. I was also a professional dishwasher. But I was quite successful in leveraging the ideas and the things that he taught me. So I took a business unit from basically worst in the company out of 100 to one of the best out of 100 business units. Subsequently, like 10 plus of the people who had worked for me had went on to have long careers with the company and also moved up into leadership roles, and many of them into very, very senior leadership roles within the company. So, you know, I had the opportunity as a young leader to actually affect a business unit and then multiple business units and to buy the metrics, drive success, and then, but more importantly, with the people, drive engagement, build culture to the point that the people on my team became more successful than I ever was in the in my leadership role with the organization. Unfortunately, he was way too young, and he was 64 and got a rare disease, and within nine to 12 months he had passed. And wow, this guy's one of the healthiest guys you ever met. That guy never drank, smoked, he exercised rigorously, you know, and just one of the nicest human beings you could ever meet, way nicer than me. And I don't know how I turned out this way, but you know, so we had kind of gone down that, and that was an inflection point for me in my career. And I'd always wanted to work for him. I always like, Dad, I'm like, come on, let me come work for you. So I said, no. And then when, you know, I had this crossroads, like continue my very successful career where I was at, where I was winning and it was fun and I was doing good, to then go take over what at that point was this very, very small behavioral assessment company.
Yeah.
And that's why I came to realize why he didn't want me to get involved. He wasn't making any money. So I went to no paycheck and just back to the grindstone and had to grow basically a business from virtually from scratch.
Is that the precursor or the yeah. origins of the business that you're in now?
Yeah. That's the origins. Yeah. Yeah. So,
okay.
So yeah. And then, that, you know, allowed me the opportunity to be with him every single day. To this day, I get to be with my father and share his ideas.
I love it. What's maybe one of the more impactful ideas that you continue to share today from your father?
Oh, the cornerstone for me in everything when it comes to people is hiring people for integrity and attitude. So, you know, a lot of times that's disguised in culture. It is part of often it's a big part of what people say and mean when they say, hey, we have a good culture, or I'm hiring for people that have a culture fit. Although you have the great example where there's a little bit of a difference there. So your culture is let's win at all costs. But I bet you part of that culture is like, I want to do that with people with integrity and who have a good attitude. Right.
Oh, you know? For sure.
Yeah. I don't think you want to do this with somebody who's shady and like, you know, not honest. And
No. I don't need high drama. I don't need issues. I don't need
a grumpy grouch, you know, or no, a negative no. Nancy or whatever you want to call them. Right. You know? So we don't typically want that in our organizations. I mean, maybe one exception to that would be like Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, fine, go ahead and just hire the most unscrupulous salespeople you can ever can. You'll probably be successful until you go to jail.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I love that. Thanks for sharing that. So how did you turn this business around? You said you got into it and you're like, oh, well, maybe surprised a little bit by the financial, you know, status of the business. What did you do to start to turn this around?
I locked myself in a room and I worked my ass off. That was the truth, right? The basics of it, right? You know,
anybody that wants to be successful, that's where it starts. Work as hard as you can.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just did whatever I had to do. But, you know, for me, and this is still part of our core values, is I leaned it, you know, I thought, you know, I'd learned a lot, I think, or I thought I knew a lot, but I was only like 31 maybe. So I also had this bit of an imposter syndrome. Who's going to listen to this young guy? Hell does he know, right? He has no experience. I did have some experience, but I still was very young as a leader or as a person. I still am, I like to think, very young. But, you know, so I really leaned into studying a lot of the other thought leaders in the space around hiring. I had some exposure to them before, but I leaned into those. And then I just leaned into regurgitating what I learned, but then also practicing what I learned. So pretty early on, I spent a lot of time with assessments. Our core assessment product, which now we are so much more than that, but we still have this product. It's an amazing product. Is really focused on a kind of higher level type of hires. So, you know, mid-level like professionals to like very senior level, like CEO.
Okay.
So we spent a lot of time consulting with our clients. They have a candidate, they take the assessment. I have got it, Jeff, you know, okay, here's your candidate. Let's talk about your candidate and let's talk about their results and let's talk about what that means and what to do next, right? So we end up having a lot of these highly consultative conversations with our clients. So I started bringing in a lot of the ideas that my dad had shared and, his book, Hiring Talented Team Players. I'm a big fan of top grading. That's the Brad and Jeff Smart and Lou Adler, I'm a huge fan of, and actually have had the great honor of collaborating with him on some projects here just recently in the last couple of weeks and months and been working with him. He wrote a book called Hiring With Your Head, Win-Win Hiring, Performance-Based Hiring. There's kind of different coin terms that he's used. Mark Murphy, Hiring for Attitude, and several others. So really leaned into those things. And so I began sharing alongside, you know, some of the things we're doing in the assessment space of other ideas around hiring and began to formulate those. So actually my dad taught me this, you know, if you want to learn something, you want to master it, you see it, you watch somebody do it, you do it yourself. So I did it. We started doing recruiting work. This was not part of the business. So we started paying search work. We actually started like sourcing candidates, interviewing candidates. I ultimately interviewed over 10,000 job candidates.
Wow.
I'm also Malcolm Gladwell guy. that doesn't pick up on you. No. So I did it. I practiced it a lot. Right. And then I started teaching it. And that's where you get to that. Hopefully, like to think you're getting closer to a level of mastery, right?
Yeah.
And that was my MO, and that's what we did. And we just started learning and then regurgitating, practicing and putting it, being right in there in the trenches with people, and then just freely sharing everything we've learned and best practices and consolidating it down so that hopefully others can take advantage of these ideas too.
Yeah.
That was the cornerstone. That's when things, you know, really taken off for us. Every time we've doubled down on that idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to get into that. There are a couple things that strike me though. First, you know, when you take a business, you mentioned you got into recruiting and that wasn't part of what you were doing before. You added this in. Anytime you add in another service, you kind of start saying, well, did I just change a business? Did I just add another business model on top? Or so I want to talk about that for a second. But also you mentioned, it seems that you mentioned a bunch of people who you've, you know, maybe call, I don't know, you can clarify. They sound like they're probably experts in the space and you're like, hey, I want to get to know you guys. I want to collaborate with you guys. I want to work with you guys, learn from you guys. Did you kind of build your own sort of advisory network this way? Because what was the kind of course that you took to get connected to all these people within your industry?
You know, I did build a relationship with Lou Adler until recently. And so he's 80 years old now. And he happens to live down the street from me in Laguna Beach. And that was kind of convenient. But the other guys are just, I just studied their content, man. I just read it. I don't know them. I'm just a fan.
Okay. You know,
and I just leaned in. I just learned it. I practiced it. I read it. Stuff, but I mean, mostly I read their books, and I read their books many times now. At this point, I reread them regularly every few years, and I always learn something new or punctuate something different. And you know, I out there, I try to, you know, give them all the credit in the world here. You know, my kind of ultimately what I evangelize is an amalgamation of a handful of, you know, kind of some of I think everybody's best ideas. You know, a lot of them cross over too; they're kind of similar.
Yeah. Do you think that's more accessible for in your industry? Because a lot of the people who are out there are probably also writing and sharing thought. There's kind of a lot of thought leadership in this field, right? Where you're,
I don't know about that.
Oh no,
I think there's a lot of thought leadership in business leadership and like kind of, you know, strategic.
And, okay.
How to be, you know, how to be a great leader. Now, talent acquisition is a piece of it. I think one, arguably one of the most important pieces, but I think people overlook that. I think, frankly, people don't give enough attention to talent acquisition in their strategy. They think about like having missions and core values and great KPIs and measurable expectations. These are all super important things. I've used all these strategies to help me be successful in many endeavors. But at the end of the day, if you are not great at attracting and assessing, evaluating, and making phenomenal hiring decisions, you're in trouble. So it's like the chicken and the egg problem. If you don't do that, then it doesn't really matter how good your core values are.
Interesting. Where do you think people get it wrong? Do they, because, you know, your dad, you mentioned he was an executive coach, right? He was helping coach people. And I think a lot of leaders oftentimes start there and they say, oh, if I could be a better leader, then my business will do better. And I get the sense that that's a part of it. But if you do that without addressing the people part of it too, the team part of it, that sounds like that's a big
leader
mess.
Is a leader of people at the end of the day, right? So if you've accidentally let problem generators or talented terrors into your world and you're not doing anything about it, then it's going to become a problem and it's going to hold you back. And it's a slow process to recover from that. It doesn't happen easily. You know, it's actually the results are very immediate when you eliminate a problem person from your organization. That's number one. But in terms of like rebuilding, finding somebody else and then getting them fully assimilated into your culture and your system and your process, it takes a year before you know that whether or not you got the right person. You know, you could find out really early it's wrong. Like, you know, week one, they like, you know, do something stupid. You know, you could be like, oh, maybe that was a big mistake. Like, you know, already calling in sick and making excuses or doing weird things. You know, you can let those people go, you know, pretty quickly. But it really takes a long time to ultimately, you know, for people to settle into organizations and to be able to make a large impact. They can make an impact right away, but to make a very significant, it takes time at the end of the day.
Yeah. Did you have a couple experiences where you, I mean, kind of worst case, best case, where you've seen this play out with either your team or teams that you've worked with?
Oh, well, I see. That's a good one. I mean, I think back, we hired a talented terrier when I was in the dish machine business. And the guy was President's Club sales guy, you know, year one.
Mm-hmm.
But
so talented. That's the talented part.
Very talented. Was extraordinarily disruptive. You know, that drove out other, maybe more tenured or appreciated people, but people we did appreciate, right? Out of the organization. He also, because he was not on the always up and up on things, he created a lot of fires that were distractions for the leadership team and other people within the organization. I personally had to threaten to fire him like at least three times. So there was a lot of emotional baggage and damage done. It's hard to measure some of that. Although some of it, you know, when you see other people leaving or the distraction around all of that, you know, was it really worth it? No. And the moment that person leaves the organization, everybody breathed a sigh of relief. They didn't go, oh shit, who's going to, you know, where's my next sale going to come from? Didn't say that. They said, oh, thank Lord, he's gone. Right. So, you know, those are, I think, often the cases, right? When you end up with a problem person, in this case, he was a talented terror. He was really good at what he did. Mm-hmm. And a lot of organizations put up with talented terrors. These people, rain terror across the org, right? So.
What about on the other end of the spectrum? That's somebody who's, I don't know if it's been a fast reveal or a, you know, slow baked, you know, development where you've seen people really come through and be real team members or show the performance. Like what does that look like?
Weston, who's been with me now 9 years, maybe something like that. at this point. Yeah, we hired him as an intern to help us do a lot of technical data and statistical analysis. We're in the assessment space. We do a lot of statistics in this world. And I actually like hired somebody else, like really high caliber and like, you know, well paid. And, you know, the guy lasted like 3 months and was like, this ain't gonna work, you know. And then you know, went back to Weston and, you know, hired him as like as entry level as you could possibly be. And he is one of the most remarkable human beings I've ever had the opportunity to work with. And right away he made an impact. He did more than that really high paid guy did in 3 months. He like ran circles around the guy in terms of production. So, you know, part of that, it's just Weston. He's just an amazing human being, but you know, he just got the work done. He just put the nose to the grindstone and just did what it took and just figured it out. Right. As opposed to complaining or over strategizing or like, you know, maybe the work was beneath the other guy. Right. Kind of, I don't know what the problem was exactly. You know, a long time ago now, but you know, right away made a huge impact. And right now he's, he runs the company at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But he is the brain behind this business. You know?
How do CEOs, you know, other CEOs, what advice do you have for them to help them identify more quickly whether someone's a talented terror or a great performer like Weston?
Well, nobody ever likes this advice, but it's really, really good. I've done it 10,000 times, so it's hard to argue with me on this, but you will, people will. It's really simple, you know. Whoever that person is, you know, Joe, you know, where did you work before this? Or, you know, what was your last role? It was at XYZ company. Great. What did you do? I've got the context behind enough context to understand what, you know, this person did. Hey, if we get to the next step in this process, can you get, or who is your direct supervisor when you were at XYZ company? It was Jane. Great. What was her role? Something credible I'm looking for. And if we get to the next step in the process, can you get Jane to hop on the phone with me for a few minutes to talk about the time you two spent working for me? And this is the moment of truth.
It's either a yes or a hem and ha and avoid the question.
Yep, it's exactly that, right? And I'm pretty persistent in helping them overcome the hems and haws. I'm gonna try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I get it, you know, it's been a long time, but this is like the modern world. I'm pretty sure you probably still have their cell phone number in your cell phone number.
Yeah.
Or you can find them on LinkedIn or TikTok or something. I mean, it's not rocket science to find other people. You can call somebody, you know, I don't really care. You know, HR has a policy against it. That wasn't my question. The excuses go on and on and on. The only one that kind of works is they died. But then I just seek for somebody else. There must be somebody else in the organization that, you know, at that time that could provide you a credible reference. You know, right. You know, so, but you do that over the last 10 years of somebody's work history. And you can even do this with young people. I mean, they're 19 years old, like a teacher, a coach, their parent. I don't care. Like I've talked to a number of people's parents and asked them, and you'd be surprised, you know, the mom or the dad will give you a pretty good, like, you know, honest assessment of their kid, you know, like, I mean, many of them will, some of them might just,
they can't help it. They've got their opinions and they want to share them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, but there are always a reference that's credible no matter what level. And, you know, the person who cannot get a credible reference, multiple credible references from their past history, right? That's a scary sign. Like, you know, our mothers taught us all pretty well. You know, if you got nothing nice to say, don't say it at all. So it's the absence is, that's all you need to know. Like, oh, Jeff, you can't get your past boss to hop on the phone and say nice things about you. And it's your last one. And it's the one before that. And it's the one before that. And it's one before. I mean, I could excuse like, okay, maybe there was a mistake. Maybe the one gal or guy was total psycho, you know, like, but you're telling me now it's like the one that for that. And there are always different excuses too, by the way, right? It's never like that was a bad boss and I'd rather you not talk to him. It was like, that was a bad boss and I'm talking, that one doesn't work there anymore. The HR has a policy against it. I'm not in touch with them. Oh, you just gave me every excuse under the book. Like, it doesn't add up. A players don't act like that.
I'm thinking back on a hire I made earlier. Oh gosh. 15 years ago, maybe. and no, more than that. It was maybe 18 years ago. I hired somebody, looked great on paper,
yeah,
great resume. And I called his employer, his past employer, and this is in the legal field, right? So he's a newer attorney, older attorney, entered the law later in life after 20 years in engineering at companies like Intel and stuff like that. And I called the law firm, you know, down the road from me, who he'd been working for, and their answer to me was, you know, hey, you know, would you hire him again? And their answer to me was, yeah, with the right job came up, we'd hire him again. And I realized later that this attorney was being very politically correct with me, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, thought later, I asked one of his partners, I think later, I'm like, what he really meant was, we don't have any types of jobs like that for him at our law firm.
Yeah.
So he was not a good fit. But he might be a good.
So you'd ask, like, well, what would that kind of job be like? You
know? I learned later to ask those follow up questions. So, it was.
It does take practice.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, that was probably my interview number four, not 9,487.
You don't need to do it that many times either, by the way, to get good at it.
Oh yeah.
You do it a handful of times, again, with intentionality, right? Then you get good at something. If you're just blown in the wind, just ask, I don't know what to do, so I just kind of randomly stumble through it, well, then you randomly will get results, right?
Yeah. Nope. I think we've all been there. That's part of the growing pains here. So I'm glad you're sharing those things. The other thing I want to get into with you, if we can, is some of the growing moments of your company. You know, some of those points where you maybe had turning points or pivotal decisions you made. Do you have a few of those from the history and the growth of the company since you've been there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about a little, you know, the number one thing, I mean, early on, right, I was this little assessment company. I was desperate for money. We decided to start doing recruiting, which served a bunch of purposes for me. I made more money. I could afford to keep doing the thing I really cared about with the assessment thing. And, but it became very convoluted, right? We were doing running two kinds of businesses. And the moment we realized that and we separated the teams and we sort of turned them into two separate businesses, we immediately began doubling in revenue. And so the lesson for me there was just focus, right? So because we were doing too many things in one business, they seem related, but they weren't, right?
So this is kind of the coaching side, the recruiting side. And people do that because they're like, well, I need to double revenue. But the irony that you're explaining is that when you finally separated them out, that's when you really doubled revenue.
Exactly.
So we're talking about hiring people, and we're talking about getting into some of the breakout moments that you've been dealing with. I had a slight glitch in my internet, so if the audience notices that, that's why this is a little bit disjointed here. But you were talking about you know, separating the businesses out. You'd added a second business in order to, you know, add revenue, kind of survive, get to the next level. And then eventually you said to yourself, I gotta separate these out. And that's when you doubled revenue. Like, who was on the team and how did you know to do that at that point in time?
Well, I was. So I'm an EO, Entrepreneurs Organization member, and I was part of their accelerator program. And, you know, I don't know, maybe a couple of years or at some point it really sought out that kind of, how do I find my mastermind, my peer group, this, you know, how do I learn how to be a business owner? I didn't know how to be a business owner. I mean, I was a leader in a relatively big business prior, which I learned a lot from, but that didn't teach me how to be an entrepreneur. So, you know, I sought that out, and that was an idea that came, you know, I think that was formed for me reflecting monthly on my business challenges, wins, what was going on. Essentially, you know, in that journaling type of a, you know, format, and then sharing with my peers and then learning from smart people, hearing what they were doing and some of the ideas, and continuing just to be a student of entrepreneurship. And it dawned on me, we processed the idea, you know, at one point with the group, and, you know, I said, here's what I'm doing and this and that. And I got some feedback from my peers and a coach,
and they're like, Fletcher, you're running two businesses.
Yeah. And they're really good about not giving hard advice, but, you know, that then became the epiphany. It was like, I got to get focused. and I'm running two businesses. And so then I put into motion, like, really separating the teams as much as I could. We're still very small, right? But I really did. We really separated it. We created two different business plans. You know, we made sure that people were focused on tasks and jobs. And I think we hired a couple of people so that, you know, that they would join the respective teams. And we began to treat them like two separate businesses and doubled, like, the next 3 years on each side of the business.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Right. So each business itself doubled, right, year over year for a couple of years there. And yeah, so that was just eye opening focus, right? It matters a lot.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, 3 years of doubling growth, that's great growth, right? For any business. That's like investable VC investable growth there, in a way. So has it been easy going since then, or you know, what did you do when you kind of hit the next plateau or the next obstacle in your growth?
Yeah. Well, that's always a good one. So we did two things. One, we started the journey of building, we have this fractional recruiting, retained search business, and then we have this talent assessment business. And so, you know, and then we'd spend a lot of time doing education, teaching people about best practices, and kind of see my thing back there. That was always the cornerstone of how we serve customers. We just always give first. Everything's free. You can Google me. My content is endless out there. You know, all the ideas, you can jump on my schedule. I will give you my time freely. You can talk to me as long as you want. But so that was like the underpinning. That's the foundational core value here, right? Right. We're going to just share these great ideas, which then feeds both sides of there. But you know, it came to a point where, like, the assessment business was really limited because of its narrow applications. Like, what our tools are phenomenal and pretty, like, mid to high level, typically more white collar type of environments, or like management, leadership types of roles. They have some, you know, a great audience or great, you know, application for a certain kind of hire, which didn't lend itself to great reoccurring revenue, didn't lend itself to higher tickets, so bigger customers, bigger sales. And I really had a dream to be able to build a SaaS platform that could end-to-end automate all these great ideas that we'd been evangelizing for all these years. And so we set out on that journey. We were making some money and we were like, all right, you know, like, I'm still young and dumb and I had enough money to do whatever I needed to do. And so I said, we're doing this. And it was the best and worst idea ever. I mean, if you want to, like, spend a lot of money, go do a, create a SaaS business. But
what year was this? Cause depending on the year, like, you could have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars versus trying to vibe code it today. Like, So many options now.
So many options, right? So this was like starting back in 2019, we kind of started the journey. You know, we didn't really get a viable product until probably just like 3 years ago, like 2023, right? 2022, 2023, and 2024 was an inflection point for us. I mean, we've since then been growing 30 to 40% year over year because we finally got a product that really has strong product market fit again. So we, you know, we kind of dabbled and we grew a little bit. Now in that journey, we acquired a company. And so that was an important component piece that, you know, allowed us to service the full life cycle of client of employees. Now we have great solutions from hiring your very entry level, you know, from a janitor to a CEO, we can solve those problems. And when we acquired a company called Integrity First, and that was crucial, and it was very aligned with our core, with like what we think are one of the most, integrity and attitude being the most important attribute that you can find to hire. There are others, but this is like, without that, as Warren Buffett would say, the motivation and intelligence will kill you, right? Really smart, motivated people will figure out a way to get you, right? You know,
what'd the business look like right before that acquisition and then right after it?
It had stalled. You know, we'd really had stalled out at that point. And so
How big was your team?
Up until like right, those things almost happened kind of at the same time. We were like, okay, we're going to go down this journey of creating this end-to-end recruitment automation platform that follows all the best practices that we've learned and have been evangelizing and still evangelize to all these, you know, all these days. And, it had really stalled in, but that, you know, kind of reinvigorated us. It opened up a whole nother market. It, tapped into a much larger client base for us. So the applicability to that, and it also created a network of partners that, that we never had before. And it gave us another thing to talk about that opened a door that we could never have opened without it. Right.
Okay. So you really added a new service offering, maybe expanded, you know, target markets or geographic markets, and the team, I imagine, grew, the revenue grew.
Yeah.
And you just, it sounds like what you feel like, what you ended up with was more of the complete package, as opposed to what you'd had before was two different packages. And you're like, we gotta run these differently. This acquisition wasn't adding on a second disparate package. It was adding.
No, because it fit into our suite of assessments and into the whole idea of like, you know, of all the different things we're going to do throughout the recruiting process. So, but it filled a gigantic hole for us, and it created a conversational piece that really, which led to us doing a webinar with Captive Resources and on St. Patrick's Day this year that drove 3,300 live attendees.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's the biggest stage.
What was the topic on?
Don't hire your next work comp claim. So
sorry, don't hire what?
Your next work comp, a workers' compensation claim.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah.
There's an interesting story behind all. Well, people who've been on the job for less than 1 year have a disproportionate probability of turning into a work comp claim.
Okay.
Now, you're a lawyer. Maybe you know some of this stuff too. But when you turn over an employee, you're the probability of having some employment-related claim just shoots through the roof. Obviously, it's kind of an obvious no-brainer thing, right? You terminate the person for whatever reason. They hate you. You hate them. I don't know. Whatever. You know, or it's really benign. But when you turn somebody over, that is an inflection point in a relationship, employer and the employee relationship. If for some reason that doesn't go really well, then they may retaliate against you.
You know, I have seen that with some of our small clients where in certain industries, it seems more prevalent when an employee quits or they're terminated for some other reason. There are a few clients where there's just this surprising ratio of people who file unemployment claims versus those who don't.
Wage and hour harassment or work comp claims.
Yeah. Right. In the business I'm thinking of right now, it's really unemployment claims. And I'm like, these people all like voluntarily terminated employment. And then even up to a year later, they'll go back and they'll file unemployment claims. And you're just like, you're not going to win this. You don't know what you're doing. Like, this is probably fraudulent, you know.
It is. I mean, you know, technically they're not entitled if they voluntarily resign. But not
every industry is like that, you know, that I've seen. So there's some industries where the claim rates are just surprisingly high.
Yeah.
So
there's a strong correlation between turnover. So now if you're in a sector where you have very high turnover, well, guess what? That means you have a lot of people who are less than, so if the person's less than 1 year on the job, they have a much higher probability. It's like 30 to 40% of all work comp claims come from people with less than one year on the job. So that is the largest cohort of cost in a work comp program comes from people who are less than 1 year on the job. Well, if you have really high turnover, 100%, so that means you have 100 employees, you hire 100 employees every year, keep your work filled. That means you have a ton of people who are less than 1 year on the job. Your probability of having a high frequency of claims and the severity of those claims and the cost of those claims is just through the roof, right? So if you solve who you hire, if you don't hire people who have lack integrity, then the number turnover goes down, and subsequently the frequency and the severity of claims go down.
Yeah, it's just statistically. Really simple.
And this has been studied. This when we acquired the company, it was amazing. I was a customer of this company when I was in the dishwashing business. Serendipitously landed in my lap. my customers started saying, hey, you know, you have a replacement for this product. They're kind of, they're going away or they're doing something. And so I just called them up. I was like, what's going on, guys? And they're like, we're tired. The owner is old or whatever. And I was like, well, this product's amazing. You know, I like this product. You know, this is the same product he used to use back, you know, 10 years ago, whatever. Like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, well, how much you want? Whatever. We made a deal, right? You know, it's like, well, I'll keep it alive for you. You know, I'm gladly, this fits into my quiver really, really nicely. And so it was a really fun acquisition for us. It was very, again, it created this whole nother kind of dialogue. It really completed the end-to-end vision that we'd hoped to be able to accomplish and be able to solve problems for people at every level of their hiring. We already had the high-end stuff. Now we had the stuff for the frontline workers. And we had this great narrative, and we inherited 3 scientific journal articles and that backs up what this does. Plus, we've been able to do some of our own research and all sorts of case studies and open up the door to a whole bunch of relationships that we never would have even explored, which led to really large audiences and great, you know, conversations with new customers that never would have occurred, right?
Well, and then you've also taken and you've created the platform. You've made a platform out of this too. Mm-hmm. I imagine having that whole suite makes the platform, I mean, there's more content or whatever to put on the platform, but it makes it more attractive to people who are saying, you know, I don't want a one-off, you know, one function platform. I want the platform that covers the life cycle. Did that come into play for you?
That was a big part of it, right? That was why we built the platform. And again, it filled the hole in the plot and what we were trying to do there. And subsequently, we can really take people from the beginning of the journey of, you know, need to find somebody through to all the way to hired. And we do that leveraging like 6 to 7 of the most predictive things that you can do in the hiring process. We provide you the tools to effectively automate all of those things as much as needed or required or appropriate for the situation. And so that just turns into a remarkably better experience for good candidates, a remarkably better experience for the HR recruiters, the hiring managers, executives, and produces real meaningful results in terms of high quality hires that drive revenue and are not toxic.
Yeah. Who typically uses this platform?
Well, we work predominantly with executives and CEOs and the C-suite to introduce these ideas. And then inevitably we work with their HR or their recruiting team. So whoever, you know, is doing that, but we touch, you know, from the C-suite to the HR/recruiting function within an organization, even to the hiring manager. So just yesterday, right, we're consulting with their mid-level, you know, hiring managers and teaching them best practices around hiring. So they get this full kind of wraparound education and suite of tools. So we end up touching all the key players within an organization.
Okay. Is there a typical, like, customer profile that you see, like certain industries or revenue sizes or employee counts that come to use this, or is it you know, agnostic? Everybody can use it at any level. Yeah. How's that work?
It's at any level. We do a lot with really, really small business. We got like a lot of house cleaners and dog sitters. They run these lot people, mm-hmm. really small businesses, franchise groups. We do, so a lot of these are very, very small. Those, you know, really great because we have turnkey solutions for them. It's just turn it on and here's your playbooks, right? But all the way up to 1,000 employees typically, although we have some larger clients with tens of thousands of employees. And so, but we love that, you know, say 50 to 500 employees, closely held, you know, companies where the executive team cares about the quality of the people and they care about the health of their company and they are people minded in their how they're running their organization.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few more questions around this out if you got time for it. I'm curious to know where the business is headed in the next maybe 3 to 5 years. But before we get there, my other two questions are, do you see what kind of difference does it make for your team to be involved in the people business with their customers? Like, I would assume that your team, I would assume you see it differently, and that probably also your team members see it differently.
Sure.
Do you feel like your team operates at a different level than most companies because of the business that they're in?
I mean, it's part of our culture, right? I think, you know, they don't fit here if they don't sort of align with these ideas very well, right? So, but I think they take a lot of pride in what they're doing, and they, we get an endless amount of compliments on the quality of service. We kill people with service and good ideas. We always give first, and, you know, people write a check, you know, for that, right? Yes, we ask people for money, but at the end of the day, how often the customer's like, how do I pay you? We hear that more often
than yeah.
We have never asked them for money. They're like, how do I write a check to you?
I like this. I want more of this.
Yeah. We're like, okay, finally, here's the price.
Well, how is the platform?
All our pricing is all transparent. So like, you don't have to ask us. You know, it's all right on the web, right? We don't hide it. So that's also part of our philosophy. Like we are so transparent. We don't like, they don't bother to look, but you know, they could if they wanted to, but you know, it's fun when they're like, hey, how do I pay you?
Right. Yeah. What is having the platform done for your business? Like what's the, is this part of the 30-40% annual growth that you're talking about?
Yeah. Or? These last couple of years as this product, this reimagined what we call the discovered, you know, platform has launched, you know, really significant growth for us for the last couple of years as it hit product market fit probably, you know, 2.5-3 years ago, you know, and now the last 2 years we've really hit our stride, and we've been pulling out all the major competitors from Rippling, UKG, Paylocity, Bamboo HR. We smoke all of them in this area. All these products, HR space has lots of end-to-end products, and you know, I'll be biasly, you know, say like we want to be careful about buying the bundles. Those products are great typically at payroll and HR, but they are not talent acquisition machines. And we've done a great job of helping people decouple and still have an end-to-end solution too at the same time. So fully integrated, like they don't skip a beat, right? But there's a myth around these kind of end-to-end solutions. Like, well, it's all in one package. Well, talent acquisition is such a different animal than HR compliance and payroll that those companies don't understand it like we do. It's been really exciting to see customers' eyes open when they try it and they go, oh, I get it now.
What would be the first notable result that a lot of your clients would see? If I were to pick this up in my law firm or one of my clients, you know, with 40 employees and they're selling whatever product or service they sell, what would they notice when they first start using your product?
I was talking to a CPA firm owner this morning and she's like, she was just using Indeed alone by herself and she was paying Indeed. To us, zero advertising dollars spent. She has more applicants, more quality applicants, and the candidates, she went from like totally overwhelmed to high quality candidates on her schedule in under 3 days. So the speed at which they could go from I don't know where to begin. I don't know who to choose. And I'm overwhelmed by the options. None of them look very good to I'm excited to talk to these like two or three candidates. Because they've been vetted.
Huge difference there. You don't have to filter through 200 Indeed applicants for whatever job you posted.
Only 1% of them are probably people you might be interested in. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That would be a big difference. Well, with this all working for you, you know, your team working away, the platform, you know, helping grow the company. What's the outlook for you guys? Where do you see this going in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, well, we want to just keep, you know, cranking those numbers up. I mean, we want to keep the 30% a minimum, you know, year over year growth. We'd like to, you know, hit maybe another, you know, inflection point there, right? We'll continue to move up the food chain and continue to work with larger and larger larger companies. You know, we don't have a lot of aspirations to work with mega companies, but we like to continue to move up and, you know, work with solid, privately held, you know, larger organizations who appreciate people as an important part of their business. And so we expect that to continue. We're fully bootstrapped, always have been. We have no outside money. I don't want to do anything else for the rest of my career other than help people solve this problem. So expect us to just continue to chug away. You know, I think Canva is maybe a good example if anybody knows their story. I'm a little bit influenced by them. I mean, they've been privately held, bootstrapped, never raised money, you know, type of an organization. And they did what they did really, really well, creating kind of great creative marketing type tools for the world. And it was out of love, you know, this is what I'm going to do. So we're going to continue to improve. We're going to continue to grow, and we're going to continue to touch and affect and share really amazing ideas and enjoy the journey.
I love it. You've built a situation where that sounds like that's all possible. And not everybody gets to enjoy building and living out their ideal situation. So congratulations on being able to do that. Just as one last thing, a lot of CEOs who listen to this, they're on the same journey. You know, they've experienced some of the things you've experienced. They've experienced some things you have yet to experience, maybe, and they have yet to experience some of the stuff you've experienced already. What would you say to people who are on that journey? How would you connect with them or leave them with an insight that might be useful?
To me, focus has always been the thing. I talked about that early in the journey. I still have to refocus oftentimes, right? That's sometimes I struggle, sometimes I stray, right? You know, probably more often than I should. But, you know, every time I get really, really laser focused, clear the noise and I stop chasing squirrels and things like that, good things really happen for me. That clarity starts with my own personal mission, vision, and what I want. And, you know, really, to me, that's to raise my two wonderful kids to be well-adjusted, amazing, happy kids, and to be a really, really active part of their lives. That's kind of the cornerstone. There's more to it, but like that is the driving force for me. And so everything aligns with that. And then business is a vehicle for that. And the fact that I love what I do and I'm so passionate about that, that's super important. I mean, I guess if I ever stopped, I would do something. I'd quit. I don't know. I'd sell it, whatever. But as long as that's, you know, important, but that's part of focus, right? Like I love this topic. I love this subject matter so much. I'm constantly thinking about it. And that's just fun for me. Like,
well, when you work at something you like and you get to work with the people that you like working with, yeah. It's that much better. Well, Fletcher, thank you so much for coming on the show, spending time with us, sharing your insights with us, and letting us enjoy a little bit of the behind the scenes of your journey.
For having me, Jeff.
Yeah, it's been great. And for all of you in our audience who've joined us today, thanks for coming and being a part of the Breakout CEO podcast.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.